Hi there. I'm Stefan T. Lawade, Visual C++ Libraries developer, and welcome back to part three of my Advanced STL video series. In this part, we're going to be talking about Iterator Debug Level, as it's known in Visual Studio 2010. But you might also know it by its previous names, Secure STL and Has Iterator Debugging. So today I'm going to be explaining how these features work, and a couple of tricks that we use in our implementation that you can even use in your own source code. For example, Pragma Detect Mismatch, and also a secret undocumented compiler switch that will allow you to look at the representations of your data structures, which is really cool. So observant readers, viewers, may notice that in the last part, I bought new shirts with two buttons, and especially observant viewers may notice that I actually got new glasses for this part. Don't worry, though. I've always had a prosthetic eye. It's just that I got a darkened lens from Lens Crafters. So don't worry. So let's get right to Iterator Debug Level. Let me spell out the features for you so there's no confusion about what's going on. This is the macro in Visual Studio 2010. It's a mouthful to say, so I like to refer to it as IDL, not to be confused with the interface definition language or whatever it is. And in Visual Studio 2005 and 2008, they were known as two different features, Secure STL. Which I just referred to as SCL. The SCL here stood for Standard C++ Library. As far as I can tell, only Microsoft ever used that acronym, whatever. And also Has Iterator Debugging. And I refer to this one as HID. Very inventive acronyms here. So these are old, and this one is new. So what exactly is going on here? There's two ways I could explain this. First, I could explain just the new world order, which is actually much simpler than before. Or I could do it historically, explaining what we did in 2005 and then how we changed it in 2010. I'm actually going to do it historically because some of you, especially if you've been using the STL for a while, are probably already familiar with how things used to be. So I'll explain that pretty quickly, and then I'll go into how it's changed in 2010. And as you can see on the screen here, I'm actually running 2010 SP1, which was just released. Please upgrade. It fixes important STL bugs and also compiler bugs and ID bugs and things like that. So in the old world order, I can switch to a different color. We had these two switches, Secure STL, Has Iterator Debugging. They were added in Visual Studio 2005, or VC8. And they're kind of confusing because they do similar things, yet different. So with STL in release mode, okay, and this was in either 2005 and also 2008, so VC8 and VC9, release mode defaulted to SCL being 1 on. And the names are macros. You can, although I advise against it, define these macros to be different values project-wide to change the settings. So I'll go into that later. And in debug mode, Has Iterator Debugging defaulted to be 1. So I just refer to them as SCL HID. They do different things. So debug mode is probably the easier one to understand. What does HID equals 1 do? Well, Has Iterator Debugging provides powerful correctness checks. It can detect many, not all, but many misuses of the STL. If you've got a vector of 10 elements and you access the 100th element, HID can detect that. It can also detect more subtle bits of misuse, for example, getting an iterator to a container and then destroying or resizing that container such that that iterator is invalidated. Usually, STL implementations can't detect that, but HID can through its magic. We'll see how that works. When it detects badness, it will pop up a debug assertion dialog that explains exactly what went wrong. I can show you an example of that. whereas SCL does something different. So it's a release mode feature. And what it does is this secure part of the name, if it detects certain categories of misuse, it will kill your program dead. The idea here is that your production application, maybe you're running on the desktop or your server application, you're using the STL, and you've got a bug in your code such that you can access invalid elements of a vector. If SCL can detect that, rather than being completely exploited by the attacker who has found a way to exploit your vulnerability, instead it will terminate your program immediately, downgrading whatever the exploit would have been, for example, escalation of privilege or corrupting data, reading credit card numbers. That'll be downgraded into a denial of service, which is the least bad thing that can happen if your program does contain a bug. If your program contains no bugs in its use of the STL, then SCL buys you exactly nothing, except for a performance penalty. I'll get to that in a bit. So the fact that SCL is for release mode security checks and HID is for debug mode correctness checks is somewhat confusing. More confusing is the fact that HID is only for debug mode. You can never enable it in release mode. If you try, it won't work. SCL actually exists in debug mode, but HID supersedes it. If you're doing all of these powerful correctness checks, SCL's checks are actually a strict subset. So the fact that we've got these two options in six different configurations, two for release, four for debug, very confusing. Historically, this is because Microsoft in 2005 went through a big security push and added Secure SCL. And I believe that Dinkumware separately added Has Iterator Debugging at the same time, hence two switches that do similar things. So in 2010, when we unified our implementation with that of Dinkumware's, the STL sync as we called it, we got this new switch, iterator debug level. So I'll erase this. And in 2010, life is simpler. So IDL in release mode. And IDL in debug mode. So in release mode, there's a change. Well, first, we unified SCL and HID into IDL. So IDL 0, that's super speed mode. No checking whatsoever. You get a plain old STL implementation with maximum performance. IDL 1 is the equivalent of Secure SCL. So that is the security checks. And IDL 2 is the equivalent of HID, powerful correctness checks, debug mode only. The old macros are still supported for backwards compatibility. You can define them and they'll work just as before, but our headers will immediately do some preprocessor logic and map them immediately to IDL and then never check SCL and HID again. So if you're going to use these macros in any way, use IDL. It's much simpler to understand, but you don't have to go change your code if you don't want to. So aside from unifying these into a single setting with three notches, easier to understand, we also changed the default. So you'll notice that release mode defaults to IDL 0, super speed mode, debug's unchanged. Why do we do this? Well, the problem is that, yes, Secure SCL does serve as a last line of defense against programs being potentially exploited. However, it has costs. Doing a check on every access of a vector or every dereference of an iterator is actually somewhat expensive. The STL is designed so that iterators and containers really have no overhead compared to a handwritten C implementation. And indeed, as we've seen in previous parts, they can be faster using template magic. But that assumption is broken when you start doing checks on every array access, every vector access. So the idea was that, STL algorithms can lift out the checks and avoid most of the penalty, and users will be so happy that the programs will be secure that they won't mind. Well, in fact, users mind it a lot. Secure SCL has, at worst, like a 2x performance penalty, and it's not awesome if your program runs at 50% of the speed that you want it to. Users complained bitterly and at length about Secure SCL's performance penalty, and as far as I can tell, basically everyone who discovered SCL doing all these checks immediately looked for a way to turn it off. The problem is that messing around with the secure SCL switch while supported is rather hazardous to your health, and people got in further trouble trying to turn the thing off. So we looked back at it in 2010 with 5 years of experience with this feature, and we said, you know, there's lots of security features like GS, the buffer overflow check, ASLR, address space, layout randomization, that are essentially free or have extremely minor performance costs, like, you know, 0.5%, almost impossible to observe, except in very controlled conditions. Secure SCL is not like that. It has 2x performance penalties. Therefore, we need to change the default and disable it. So if you still want Secure SCL, if you think it's awesome, you can opt into it in release mode. But by default, in 2010, we go into super speed mode, no checking whatsoever, except for integer overflow when allocating memory. However, in debug mode, where performance is less critical, we still default to IDL2. So as long as you test your application exhaustively in debug mode, IDL2 will attempt to detect many common misuses of the STL. Of course, the burden is still on you, the programmer, to understand how to properly use the STL and not commit bugs in your program. But if you slip up, HID or IDL2 may be able to catch you. So that's what's going on with these switches. Now, how do they work? And where do all these performance penalties come from? Before I start looking at the code, it'll be helpful to sketch out what these things are doing. Actually, let me actually show you what the dialogue looks like. Oh, don't go to sleep, laptop. Okay, so here I've got a program with a vector, and it initializes things. Let me compile and run. So here I'm just pushing back all the squares from 0 to 9 into a vector and then printing it out. Very simple. So now let's commit a bug in the program. I think I even showed this in earlier presentations, but now we're going to look at the machinery that powers this. Let's get an iterator to the vector's beginning, like this. Okay. And let's push back a bunch more integers. This will cause reallocation. Technically, it's not guaranteed to, but in this case, I know that pushing back 10 more will. Actually, let's just push back 100. Who cares? And then let's attempt to print out the value of I, what it points to. So like this. And this here is the bug. Okay, so I am building in debug mode. Let us compile and run. That looks good. Build succeeded. Okay, so I'm broken right before the first printing of the iterator. So at this point, the vector's still valid. So I can step, and the beginning is 0. Okay, that's fine. Now I'm going to push back 100 more elements. This will trigger vector reallocation. And at this point, the iterator has been invalidated. All the way back in part one of the intro series, we saw how vector does geometric reallocation. And when it gets a new memory block, iterators pointing to the old memory block are toast. They still exist, and they can be reassigned, but attempts to dereference the iterators trigger undefined behavior. So if we jump to the dereferencing of the iterator, in release mode, you'll get undefined behavior. The program may crash, may work properly, may send a mail to your boss telling him you quit. But in debug mode, IDL2 will detect the invalidated iterator and pop up a nice assertion dialog. So let's see what that looks like. Here we go. So, unfortunately, I can't resize the font of this in high-quality mode. You should be able to see. It says, debug assertion failed. Expression, vector iterator not dereferenceable. Now, there's lots of things wrong with this dialog. For the first thing, it starts off with the title Microsoft Visual C++ Debug Library. It sounds like there's a bug in our code. No, there's a bug in your code, the user code. I would like to retitle this so it says, there is a bug in your code. The other problems with it are that the expression, which comes from the STL source code, is sometimes not the easiest thing to understand. It can complain about operator plus having invalid arguments when you were actually doing operator bracket bracket, because internally it had a plus expression. And even something like vector iterator not dereferenceable doesn't explain the true problem that the iterator has been invalidated due to reallocation. But if you're moderately familiar with the STL, It will usually give you a hint as to what's wrong. And probably the worst sin that it commits is having this abort, retry, ignore at the bottom, where retry means debug. Yeah, that's not so awesome. But the actual content of the dialogue is wonderful. The STL is telling us that we have a bug in our code and essentially inviting us to break into execution and see what went wrong and how to fix it. If only all libraries did this, that would be great. So that's where the dialogue is coming from. Now, how do we power it? Let me just abort and kill the program dead. Okay. So how did we fire that? I'm going to erase this STL and HID here, because now we live in the IDL world. Okay, so suppose that I've got a vector. We've seen its representation. It's a triple of pointers, so vector V, and it points to a nice memory block of elements. This would be V of 0. Suppose that I get an iterator I. It's basically a pointer. In Visual Studio, it's always of class type, but it just stores a pointer. To some element. Now, suppose that the vector undergoes reallocation, and you get a new, bigger memory block, and get rid of the old one. Now, in the traditional and most efficient implementation of the STL, iterators have no way to detect this. They're just pointers, basically. And if a pointer is pointing to a block of memory that has been released, it has no way of being notified that it's now garbage. Because remember, we could have like a million iterators, and the vector can't go notify them. It doesn't even know where the iterators live. And the iterators don't have anything like a ref count keeping the memory block alive. So this is where all that undefined behavior comes from. But it's fast, and fast is great. That's why we use C++ and the STL. In debug mode, if we're willing to sacrifice actually a lot of performance, by changing the representations of STL objects, we can actually be notified that reallocation has occurred. So in debug mode under IDL2, we gain extra data members. And sketching it out, it looks something like this. So vector usually has its three pointers pointing to the memory block. And it also gains, let me see here, in debug mode, a couple more pointers. That looks like this. The vector, and then you got another iterator. Like this. And let's see, that'll be my first iter. And of course, this has a pointer to whatever element's got. You can see there's a lot of pointers going on here. And this one's got a iterator to whatever other element's got. And eventually, this thing points to like null. And, oh, the iterators also have back pointers to the container, like this. Okay, so we've got a sort of a forest of pointers here. What is going on? Well, the first thing is that iterators now know where their parent container live. So I've got a couple vector iterators, I1 and I2. In addition to the pointer to the element that they always have, the vector V here, contains a dynamically allocated object that we call the proxy. I originally called it the aux object, but in 2010 it's the proxy. So the vector has a pointer to the proxy. It's the one that's allocating it. The proxy contains a pointer back to the parent vector. And the iterators have pointers to the proxy. So by doing a double dereference, they can find out where the vector lives and its size. So if you dereference an iterator, it can do things like, okay, check that it's within range of the vector. And what does the vector do? In addition to having this proxy with the back pointer, it also has an a pointer to its iterator. So a vector can find out where its iterators live, and each iterator actually has a pointer to the next iterator for that particular vector. So we actually construct a singly linked list out of where all of the iterators are. And we maintain this list. So when an iterator is destroyed or reassigned, what we do is we actually take a lock, and we will find where the iterator lives, find its parent container, walk the list, and snip it out of that singly linked list. The reason why we have to take a lock is important, because the STL, as I may have mentioned, supports the usual thread safety guarantee, meaning that multiple threads simultaneously reading a data structure, like a vector, is okay, and having a single thread write a data structure is okay, but anything else will crash. Doing something like getting an iterator from a vector and then dereferencing it and then destroying that iterator, that's all a read. You're only observing the vector. But in debug mode, we're modifying stuff. we are adding things to this linked list, and that's unsafe to do without locks. So we actually take a lock whenever we need to modify this iterator list to preserve the usual thread safety guarantee. That's one of the things that makes IDL equals 2 so expensive in debug mode, but in general, the checks are worth it for the performance that you give up. The reason why we've got this proxy thing is so imagine that I've got, I'm going to sketch out here, a couple vectors, V1 that owns a proxy 1 and has some iterator 1. And then you've got a V2 that owns some proxy 2 and it's got iterator 2, you know, possibly many, many iterators, all pointing to these proxies. Proxy points to container, container points to proxy. What happens if we swap these vectors? Well, vector swap is constant time, no fail, non-iterator invalidating. All of the iterators are preserved, except that they now point to different parents. So in 2005 and 2008, we did something pretty slow. We didn't have the proxy in debug mode. Instead, we would walk the iterator list, take under that lock, and repoint all the parent pointers to their new container very slow. And especially, not only swapping, but move semantics does this exact same thing, where we're moving one vector to another. So in 2010, we've introduced these proxy objects. There's more history there that I won't go into. And here we can do something fast. Again, we do have to take a log. But what we can do is we can say, okay, proxy 1, you're now owned by container 2, and we're going to reassign your back pointer. Proxy 2, you're now owned by container 1. We reassign your back pointer. The iterators are unmodified, except for the fact that we have to repoint their myfirsts, like that. So this one gets pointed over there, and I'm getting a mass of scribbles. So we essentially have a constant time operation of swapping these proxies and doing some other pointer assignments, which is a lot faster. I guess I will go into the history. The proxy object was originally known as the aux object. That was my name for it. This actually came from Visual Studio 2008. It was actually the first change that I made when I joined the team. When we initially implemented Secure SCL, we didn't consider the fact, this was before my time, that swapping containers had to preserve the iterators. So in release mode in 2005, swapping vectors would actually invalidate their iterators and trigger SCL's instant termination. Not awesome. In 2008, we introduced the aux objects in release mode. Remember that SCL defaulted to 1, where we didn't have this linked list of iterators, but we did have these aux objects so that we could swap them and preserve the validity. And in 2010, when we unified SCL and HID, we also gained the proxy object in debug mode, which accelerated it and made our life somewhat simpler. So that's what's going on there. Hopefully that made some sense. Let's see what that looks like in the code. I can step through pretty quickly here. So let's go back and execute this thing, jump. Okay, now I'm going to step into the dereference of the iterator. So now we are in the vector header, and dereferencing an iterator will, this is a vector iterator, and it derives from vector const iterator implementation detail. Let me step into that. Okay, so now we're in the operator dereference for vector const iterator, and you can see here we've got logic, and this, as I mentioned, this will look radically different in 2005 and 2008. I'm looking at 2010. Please join the future. If iterator debug level has been set to 2, then we've got a bunch of checks here. We're going to make sure that the iterator's parent container, it has a parent container pointer, because dereferencing like a default constructed iterator, totally invalid. And it has to make sure that if it has a parent container, that its pointer is within bounds, the myFirst and myLast pointers. If any of that is wrong, if the iterator has no parent container, or if it's pointing out of bounds, then we will trigger that debug assertion. Here's where that somewhat helpful message, vector iterator not dereferenceable, comes from. In the future, I'm going to try to, if I get some time, clean up that dialogue, possibly even number them, but that has not happened yet. And then you can also see here the code for iterator debug level equals 1. This is no longer the default in either release or debug, but you can opt into it. I don't really expect anyone to, but there you go. Where we will attempt to validate that the pointer is within bounds, and if not, we will terminate the program. And then, aside from all of that, this is what will be executed in release mode with IDL0. We'll simply dereference the thing and assume that it's valid. That's what this analysis assume is for. That's for our slash analyze switch in, I believe, premium and ultimate editions. This makes the code analyzer happy. So that's what all this stuff is doing. If we step into this getcont, we should be able to see the proxy. Yes, here we go. So this container base is the base of all containers like Vector, and it has this pointer myProxy. That is this pointer here that points to this object and that contains the back pointer. So if you call getcont, this is a method on, I believe, iterator base, yes. So you're asking the iterator, okay, who's your parent container? It will see, do I have a proxy pointer? If so, the pointer we're looking at here is this one pointing to the proxy. The vector itself is another pointer that owns the proxy. I believe they're actually both named myProxy, which is pretty awesome. Not. So this will do that double dereference and get the parent container. You can also see here methods. I won't step through all of this. This is get address of remaining iterator chain. That is the singly linked list pointers that I've been referring to. So you can see here more code that maintains this. And here are the data members of the iterator, myProxy, and also myNextIter that form that singly linked list. So pretty confusing stuff, especially because it's not documented anywhere. It's all implementation details. But if you ever have to debug through the STL, instead of simply looking at our convenient visualizers, that's what all of this stuff is doing. It's there for a reason, and not just because we love underscores. So now that we've seen that, we're going to trigger the dialogue, so let me stop this. Let me mention Pragmatech Mismatch. So erase all of this. I earlier mentioned that when you modify these macros, that could be hazardous to your health. Why? Well, let's imagine that we are in release mode, 2010, so IDL 0. Actually, let's suppose that we're in debug mode. Mixing debug and release is a bad idea anyways. So you've got a vector here, three pointers, my first, my last, my end. And then you've also got this other stuff, the proxy pointer and the my first iter. I believe that's the name. Then suppose you are in IDL 0, and you've just got the three pointers plus some other stuff. These data structures are different sizes. This thing is, ignoring that other stuff, 3 times 4 bytes on x86, 12 bytes, and this one is something like 20 bytes. If you try to mix objects compiled with these different settings of iterator debug level, well, one object is going to push 20 bytes on the stack. Another object is going to pop 12 bytes off of the stack, and vice versa, and this is extremely bad. C++ assumes that for every data structure, there is one definition. This is called the one definition rule, or ODR. If you violate the one definition rule, which iterator debug level and secure SAL and hazard debugging make very easy, ODR violations trigger undefined behavior, and in practice, utterly incomprehensible crashes. So in 2005 and 2008, we had no better solution. The burden was on you, the programmer, to make sure that if you were customizing Secure SCL, like turning it off, you did so throughout all of your project so that all of your object files agreed on the setting of IDL and the size of vector. And same for any static libraries. And also if you were mixing DLLs that in their public interface, they all agreed on the setting of IDL. And if not, you're kind of out of luck and you'll get horrible crashes. In 2010, we do some validation. So let me see if I can find where that is. That would be, xutility sounds almost good. I need to go to yvals. So open up. Excellent. Let's go find yvals h. This is our internal header that is universal to the STL. And lots of preprocessor logic here that I wrote. Here you can see the code that is mapping iterator debug level and SCL and HID, or providing a default with actually quite helpful comments that explain what we're doing. But below that is some new stuff. Here we go. Let me close this. Okay, so by default, we, after defining iterator debug level or determining its value from SCL and HID, we emit a pragma. This is called Pragma Detect Mismatch, and it takes a couple string arguments. You can see here IntelliSense has helpfully highlighted the one that's actually active, and the ones that aren't are grayed out. So what does Pragma Detect Mismatch do? It takes a key string and a value string, and the front end, the compiler front end, and the linker have been enhanced in 2010 to basically inject a linker directive into the object file. And when the linker sees all of these directives, technically called fail if mismatch, you can see that with dump bin, what'll happen is it'll look at all of the keys that are the same. So if it sees object files 1, 2, 3, 4, let me erase some of this. So if we've got object 1, dot obj, I guess that name is sort of redundant, and if we've got obj 2, obj, and this one has a Pragma Detect Mismatch IDL2 in it, so this one was compile debug default, and for whatever reason this one got a value of IDL equals 0, when the linker is trying to create either a DLL or an exe out of these objects, it will go through all of those mismatch directives and see, okay, you've got IDL set to 2, it's only looking at strings here, and IDL set to 0 here, but those values aren't the same. So it will trigger a guaranteed deterministic linker error saying, whoa, these mismatch directives conflict. It's not looking at the representations of the data structures at all, only the pragmas. But because we're defining the pragmas for you in the STL headers, we can detect mixing. That would otherwise be very bad. This isn't completely universal. In particular, if you're building a DLL, this doesn't get into the import lib. But if you want to, you can actually inject that pragma into the import lib by hand. At least for object files and static libraries, it all happens by default. This is actually documented on MSDN, I believe, and because it just works off of strings, it's not hard-coded. So you can use this technology for your own purposes if you have something like a macro or other setting that absolutely must never be mixed during linking. You can see here, too, that we have a detect mismatch for MSC ver. This is our compiler version macro, which is 1600 for 2010, or VC10. In VC11, this has been updated already to, or is being updated as soon as I RI my current changes, to 1700, because we break binary compatibility intentionally between every major version of the STL. We add and remove data members, that sort of thing. So if you try to mix a 2010 compiled object with a VC11 compiled object that are using the STL, the linker, 10 and above, will detect that and give you a guaranteed error. We can't help you if you're mixing anything 9 and below, because detect mismatch didn't exist then. So I have a few more minutes. Let's take a look at the last thing I wanted to present, which is the representations of these data structures. Now I'm going to go to the command line. I know, scary. This is where I usually live. And let's edit a file. I believe I've got kitty.cpp. Here we go. So I'm going to use vector. Let's actually take a look at, well, we can take a look at vector first. Struct x vector public vector int, like this. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to define a struct, this is for convenience, that derives from the data structure that I'm interested in, vector int. Let's take a look at its representation. So I've saved this kitty.cpp, I've edited, put it in the IDE, but now let's actually compile it. So here is the compiler incantation. Logo 24. These are the usual directives. And I want to look at debug mode. May as well be static. And let's see, kitty.cpp. But here's the undocumented linker switch, and I believe I've made this font big enough for you to see. It's called D, or compiler switch, D1, and it's case sensitive, report, I can't type, report single class layout. I can put this in the comments if you're interested. And then after this, you put the name of the class you're interested in, my X vector. The reason why I'm not saying normal vector is because we've got things like vector deleting destructor that I want to look at. X vector is unique. Let's compile like this. Here we go. So although this switch is technically undocumented and technically unsupported, it's been in there since at least 2005 and above, and it's enormously useful. This thing is just awesome. What does it do? It prints out ASCII art of your data structure's representation. Look at this. This is awesome. Here we've got vector, and it's showing that my X vector derives from vector int. That's what this mangle name is, which has a base class, here's that proxy pointer, my proxy, like I mentioned. And then it's got my first, my last, my end pointers, which we saw way back in intro part one. It also stores an allocator, and it's got some padding at the end. So we can figure out that the data structure in debug mode is 20 bytes and where all of that size is coming from. I can also compile this in release mode and see what it looks like in release mode. Here it's 16 bytes, where I don't have that proxy anymore because I derive from this container base zero. Zero means IDL zero versus IDL 1.2. See what we did there? We've still got my first, my last, and my end, and also this empty allocator. So we can see that the vector is 16 bytes. So that's pretty neat. And you may not know how to deal with mangled names. That's too much for me to go into right now, but quick summary. Mangled names take C++ identifiers like vector, bracket, int, bracket, and also default arguments like std allocator int, and mangle that into text that a basically C linker can deal with. They're called mangled or decorated in MSDN for a reason, because they are horribly mangled. You can actually transform them back into something a human can understand with our utility undName, meaning undecorate name, and then just paste whatever you're interested in here. So this thing beginning with a question mark, it says undecoration of blah, blah, blah is vector int class std allocator int. That's that default argument. So if you see these horrible mangled names, that's what's going on with them. And one final note before I leave you. In release mode in 2010, I've been saying that it's super speed mode. You're paying no penalties, no checking whatsoever, and indeed, we don't store anything like a proxy or extra bookkeeping in release mode. So you might expect that vector would be 12 bytes on x86, storing only the triple of pointers that it needs to. But instead, we've got this empty allocator here. Why are we storing an allocator? Well, the STL is, you know, templated on allocators so that if you have a stateful allocator, like an object that has a pointer to a special heap that you need to allocate out of, that will be stored within the vector. It's an object-oriented fashion of customizing memory allocation, and the vector will use that internal heap pointer or whatever through your allocate and deallocate member functions. Std allocator, though, simply wraps operator new and so forth, and doesn't contain any state of its own. It's an empty class. So you might expect, naively, that having a data member of an empty class stores nothing. It doesn't cost you anything. In fact, C++'s rules require that a data member of an empty class occupy at least one byte. So that's what's going on here. This empty allocator, std allocator, occupies a byte, and then we need three more bytes for padding alignment. If you don't know what that is, trust me, it's necessary. This is less than ideal, because for std allocator, we don't really need to store it. We could just call, you know, new and delete directly. But in general, we do need to store the allocator if it's non-empty. We are aware of this, and in VC11, we have already made changes to avoid storing the allocators. I can't show you it yet, but it has been checked into source control, so it will be very cool when I am able to show it to you. We are going to make our containers smaller, which will be awesome. It's really a bug fix level sort of thing. If someone filed a bug complaining that our containers were bloated, which they are a little in release mode, I would resolve it and tell them that we've already fixed it. So now you get to learn what's coming up, even though I can't show you yet. So I'm out of time. Let me know in the comments if the tech mismatch and D1 report single class layout are useful to you at all, or if you have other questions about our debugging machinery and other things in the STL. Till then, see you next time.